This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 116, Trach Tube Safety in Georgia Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are your hosts of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Very interesting episode today for you. We're going to be talking about trach tubes, specifically trach tube safety, for residents of long-term care facilities in the state of Georgia. And we're not doing that alone. We have a extra special guest. Her name is Michelle Glauer. She's a registered nurse. Will, tell us about a little bit about Michelle.
Yeah, so Michelle is from Chicago, Illinois, the Lincoln Park area. She earned her associate degree in nursing from Harry S. Truman Chicago Community College, a bachelor's degree in nursing from Loyola University at Chicago, and a master's in nursing from St. Xavier University, Chicago. She has over four decades of nursing experience in emergency nursing and nursing administration. She currently is a clinical instructor teaching in both the associate degree program and bachelor's program at Kaiser University, Sarasota, Florida. So we are very privileged to have her and her expertise with us today.
That's right. Michelle from Lincoln Park, welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for having me.
So one of the issues that we deal with often is the reason that we brought you on here, because you're an expert in this area, is tracheotomies and trach tubes. We will often have residents that have had an accident or because of some sort of disease end up having a trach tube placed in their throat. And there are all kinds of issues related to the care of that, the maintenance of that. But at the very beginning, can you just tell us what a trach tube is and kind of explain it?
Sure, I'd be happy to. A trach tube, also known as a tracheostomy, where they make a surgical incision in the front of your neck to provide an opening into the windpipe so they can put a tube there. And this allows air to enter into the lungs. And it's used as a temporary device, and it can also be used as a permanent device. It depends on the situation of why they are needing a trach tube to begin with. Mm-hmm. So it helps people who need to breathe or be on a ventilator, or if they've been on a ventilator for greater than 2 weeks, you have to then create this opening in their neck to provide an airway.
And it goes into the lungs, right? It's from the air pipe into the lungs.
Actually, it doesn't. It's a short tube. Mm-hmm. And when they create the hole in the front of your neck, it's below the vocal cords.
Okay.
And the tube goes, they put a plastic tube to keep the opening open. This way, the air goes right from your windpipe into your lungs. So the tube is not in your lungs.
Ah, gotcha.
It's just, yeah, it's a very short tube.
Now, are people still able to speak? Are they still able to swallow?
Good question. Yes, they can. Okay. Yes, and I probably should say yes and no.
Right.
Yeah, you can speak with them, especially patients who've had long-term trach. They do provide them with an apparatus that allows them to cover their trach to be able to force the air out of their mouth to create sounds. So, and again, that's for patients who are not fresh tracheotomy patients. Mm-hmm. They're usually longstanding, and they are able to provide them with, like I said, some sophisticated methods to cover the trach and be able to force words. They also can eat. You have to be, one of the risks is you don't want them to get any food into the trach because it could cause an what we call an aspiration to choke, because that airway is right into your windpipe. And I don't know if it's ever happened to you that you accidentally swallowed and it went down the wrong way and you're choking. Well, that would be the same thing if any food got into the front of the trach. So there is ways that patients can have food when they have a trach. So it's not all doom and gloom when you have one.
I got you. It seems to me that it's any time that you have an opening like that that's going in your body, that it's, even if it's just a catheter, if you've got something that's going in your body, it's prone to infection. Are these prone to infection?
They can be if they're not properly cared for and cleaned, especially in the presence of taking care of them in acute care settings or in nursing homes, mm-hmm. where you're going from one patient to the next. And we know that these healthcare facilities are housed with, you know, germs such as MRSA, which is MRSA, C. difficile, all kinds of infections. So you have to, when you're cleaning the trach, you really have to use strict precautions to make sure that you're cleaning around the stoma where the surgical incision is, making sure you're cleaning the inside of the trach when you take out, there's a tube, a cannula that comes out that has to be cleaned because it gets secretions on it that can form crusts. And if you don't take care of these properly, yes, they can get infected. The patient can get pneumonia. So there's lots of reasons why you do need to have follow strict precautions when cleaning.
And, you know, it always amazes me how people don't understand how dirty nursing homes can be. I was a CNA. I was a CNA for a long time in a nursing home. And after working there, one of the things that I'm constantly telling people is, listen, if you go visit your loved one, don't let your kids just play on the floor.
Yes.
You have no idea what's been on that floor the past, you know, 30 minutes. But yeah, you're right. I mean, these are places where there's an increased risk of infection. We hear oftentimes people talking about suctioning. What is that?
Yes. The patients who have a tracheostomy, they will produce a lot of mucus. And if they're on a ventilator, they're not able to expectorate, to cough it up and get it out. So, and even with ones that are not on a ventilator, may require some additional assistance in trying to help get that mucus out. And they just can't get it. We call it a plug. And yeah, you really got to get down there with a very thin, pliable tubing and help assist getting that mucus out for the patient. And it helps also to prevent pneumonia because you have to get the secretions up and out. And so we take a small, pliable plastic tube connected to the wall suction, or maybe a portable suction in some nursing homes that don't have the sophistication built into the walls. So we go down into the airway with a small tube. It will make them gag, and you will provide suction as you're bringing the tube back up. But prior to suctioning, you have to give them some oxygen, because what you're doing is taking oxygen away from them as you're bringing the catheter up out of the airway and sucking the secretion. So it is imperative that patient's airway is always clear and free of mucus. So we do that, you know, very regularly in nursing homes, hospitals, even when they're at home.
Yeah. It sounds like this is a very complicated issue to deal with. What are some major concerns that people have with trach tubes or major areas of where they run into problems?
Sure. One of the biggest problems we see is patients where the tube, the actual cannula, comes out, and it would come out either because the patient pulled it out, or it was not secured properly, and maybe a suture fell out, or the ties weren't properly tied around the neck, because we tie the part of the apparatus around the neck, and we do change those ties out. They're like little ribbons, and that's one of the biggest concerns you have, because if it's someone who just had a tracheotomy and they pulled that trache out, that airway could close, and that could put, you know, that could cause imminent danger for the patient. So you really have to be cautious. You always have to have an extra cannula in the room, you know, taped ahead of the head of the bed, because in the event that it does get pulled out and you need to reinsert a new one. So that's our biggest risk that we have with the trachs.
Yeah. What are some, you know, a lot of our listeners are individuals with loved ones in nursing care, in nursing homes or acute care centers or long-term care facilities, whatever it may be, many of which do have trachs for various reasons, whether it's accidents or, like I said, disease. What are some signs that there might be a problem?
Are you speaking once they have the trach?
Yeah, or things that family members need to look out for. Because you know as well as I do that, you know, a nursing home, some of them, you know, Georgia it is very bad. I'll just be honest with you. And some of them, you know, you really need to be vigilant on. So what are some things that family members need to take note of when it comes to visiting?
You know, if your family member has a trach, you want to make sure that their airway is clear, meaning that they are able to bring up the mucus. Otherwise, that's their airway, and it needs to be cleared. And they may be taught how to help assist with suctioning their loved ones. And you have to use proper technique in order to do it. Mm-hmm. So if the patient is filled with mucus, it's going to cause an airway obstruction. And so you have to be alert to looking at their color of their skin. Do they look grayish? Do they look cyanotic, like they're turning blue because they're not oxygenating? And so it's imperative that the airway is clear all the time from all of this mucus, because that is their windpipe to the world. So, and patients' families are great at being able to be taught how to assist in trach suctioning and to look for symptoms of an airway obstruction. You know, if the trach should fall out, you know, what would they do? They should be trained on those emergency techniques that they could do until the providers arrive. So can be very risky if you don't know what you're doing.
And what are some reasons that people end up with tracheotomy? First of all, for those of us that are not nurses, what is the difference between a tracheostomy and a tracheotomy?
A tracheotomy is the procedure. That's the actual surgical procedure. So if you were going to go in and have this done, the surgeon would be performing a tracheotomy on you. Mm-hmm. We refer to them as tracheostomies when we're speaking in a plural sense.
Yeah.
You know, we have multiple patients who've had tracheotomies, and we would call them tracheostomies then. It's kind of interchangeable, but the otomy is the actual procedure that the surgeon uses as the code,
okay,
you know, for billing, I guess, purposes. Right. But and you asked me another question, and I forgot, and
you answered it. Was and the ostomy is the as you had mentioned earlier, the stoma, the actual entrance. Now this isn't this the procedure that I know that I've seen on television in emergency situations people have had to perform on somebody, and that it could actually be done.
Well, let me tell you about that. There is a procedure that paramedics do in the field. Mm-hmm. What you'll see on TV, it's called a crico. You see, as an old ER nurse, we used to call them crics, but it's a crico something. I don't know if I'm saying it right. They do an incision in the neck. It's not a tracheostomy. It's a temporary little device. It's not sterile, so that's just to perform immediate life-saving technique in the field. If somebody were choking on a lifesaver or got a chicken bone stuck in their throat and they had to do an emergency crike, then the paramedics are trained to do that. Then when they get to the hospital, under sterile technique, they would perform the tracheotomy.
I got you. And I looked it up as you were talking, and it is called the crike, and for very good reason, because the actual term is cricothorotomy, which I can't imagine is very efficient. If you're in the field and you need to perform one, you probably just say, hurry up and do a crike.
Right.
But as far as the reasons, what are some of the general reasons that somebody may have a tracheostomy?
Sure. Multiple vehicle collision that resulted in trauma, such as a person being paralyzed from the neck down, like a quadriplegic. You will know that Christopher Reeve, Reeves had a tracheotomy, and because he had a very high level neck fracture, and he was what we call a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. And his neck was fractured at C1, C2, mm-hmm. which paralyzes his ability to be able to breathe on his own. Mm-hmm. And so he was on a ventilator attached to his wheelchair. And so we see a lot who are paralyzed with high neck fractures mm-hmm. That end up with tracheotomies. Mm-hmm. Patients who have had not just like cancer or some form of tumors in their neck may have to have a temporary tracheotomy, or patients who who've been on a ventilator too long, because what happens is, when you're on the ventilator and there's a tube going down your throat into your lungs, mm-hmm. that tube can cause like a pressure ulcer because it's in there so long, laying next to the trach, the windpipe, mm-hmm. it can cause a sore. Mm-hmm. So you've got to take that out. But taking it out, the patient won't be able to breathe. So you perform a tracheotomy and you can hook them up to the ventilator through that stoma. Through that trach. So you see that in traumatic, in trauma, and you see mm-hmm. it in certain diseases. For instance, Guillain-Barré syndrome, some patients who end up having to be on a ventilator for any length of time may end up with a temporary trach. Lou Gehrig's, where they lose a lot of control over their ability to swallow too at the end, may need a trach. All kinds of various reasons, but the major reason is more from trauma.
I got you. We have this question here, so I'm assuming that we have it for a reason. Would anticoagulants affect trach use?
Oh, good question too.
Okay, well, whoever on our staff came up with this question, we'll make sure to give them a Starbucks gift card.
Anticoagulants. It's first of all, I teach nursing, and I instruct every student, when you go in the room, I don't care what kind of procedure you're doing, whether it's starting an IV or mm-hmm. taking one out, you got to ask them, are they on anticoagulants? It makes a difference for just about everything.
Okay.
Because if the patient is going in for a trach, there will be minimal bleeding. But if they're on anticoagulants, it could prolong their bleeding times. And if you don't know ahead of time that they are on it, the patient could, you have to measure their bleeding times, and there's medication that we can give the patient if their bleeding times are too prolonged, and so that we don't have any hemorrhaging when they do the incision. But more importantly, postoperatively, nurses have to look for and be in tuned if the patient is developing a blood clot, which we call a hematoma, mm-hmm. Near the incision site. And that can grow pretty sizable and impede the airway. So you have to be able to be smart enough to be able to look for those signs and symptoms of a decreased airway from a hematoma that could be forming, because when patients are on anticoagulants, they will bleed.
So what, in general, what are the issues that you see the most with trachs then, with patients in long-term care settings?
Sure. The requirement to suction them. And unfortunately, in nursing homes, the staff, only an RN or an LPN can suction the patient. The techs or the aides are not licensed to be able to suction. The staff in nursing homes have a lot of patients, and what I see mostly is the care is, I don't want to say it's terrible, but it when you're in a hospital, you have more staff to patients because they're more acutely ill, but they still all require suctioning. So, mm-hmm. you know, patients will aspirate in nursing homes and then they have to go to the hospital because maybe they weren't suctioned often enough, or maybe they were suctioned and the nurse didn't do it properly. There's a technique, and you have to be very skillful. And I will often see nurses, when they go down to suction, they're already putting suction on the tube while they're going down, and that's inaccurate. You have to provide the suction as you're coming out of the airway, not going down into the airway. So you know, these are common errors that you see that can have some devastating results.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's something that we were talking about in another episode related to the level of skilled nursing care that that residents get. And just something that I pointed out, and I've always thought this, and clearly, you know, this does not apply to every RN. You're an RN. My brother is an RN as well. But mm-hmm. I find that the LPNs, or at least the RNs like yourself, that deal with actual patient handling, and, you know, that would actually on a regular basis do the suctioning, know what they're doing. I mean, the fact that you have an RN there, if he or she has never suctioned somebody, it's not really going to help you. I mean, the same thing, you could have a doctor standing right there, they've never suctioned anybody, they're kind of useless, you know? I mean, this is a technique that requires a lot of skill.
It does.
But, well, this is a fascinating area. It's unfortunately something that, you know, a lot of people have to deal with. You mentioned, though, that it's some people can have these in permanently.
Yes.
So you could live the rest of your life.
I've seen them.
Yeah.
Yes. But they function very well. And I've even seen patients, residents coming in to the hospital, and they don't even have a trach tube, but they have the stoma in place and mm-hmm. the hole there. Mm-hmm. And because they've had it for 30, 40 years, and the hole will never close up. And so they've got a permanent opening, and they use it and they cover it with their hands. I've even seen them do that to force air out of their windpipe to make sounds to talk. you've seen those commercials from smoking.
Oh, yes.
And the person, yeah, had part of their throat, you know, surgically incised, and she's got a little apparatus, an instrument that she holds up to her neck to formulate sound so people can hear her when she tries to talk. And that's from smoking. She has lost her voice box. She's lost part of her throat. I mean, it's horrible what just cigarettes alone will, you know, can cause.
Yeah, let this be a PSA on the dangers of cigarettes as well. I had a growing up, I had a next door neighbor who had one of those issues and had the little vibrating thing that she'd have to put up to her her throat to make sound. I can't believe they haven't advanced it any further.
I know. It's frightening to even look at if you're not a healthcare provider. Mm-hmm. Kids can be frightened, even from that commercial. It's a very scary outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Michelle, we really appreciate your breadth of knowledge and your expertise in this matter.
And Michelle, for anybody out there that would like to get a hold of you, can you kind of just talk about your legal consulting, your nurse consulting that you do, and how people could get in contact with you if they wanted to talk to you about that?
And we'll be putting that contact information across the screen for the video viewers as well.
Great. Sure. I've been a legal nurse consultant since 2004. I started reviewing medical records for both plaintiff and defense. I enjoy the work because I use a lot of my cases for educational purposes to teach nursing students how to stay out of court. And it's been very beneficial. And it even helps some of our other nurses in the hospital setting when I'm doing some teaching, keeping up on new practice, newfound things, new techniques, and how to also stay out of court. And I love it. And it's a great opportunity to educate. So, with that, I don't use Twitter or, some of the social medias that, some of the people use today. I strictly just use email and my cell phone, and I'd be happy to provide that for you.
Go ahead. Please do.
It's Michelle Glower, and that's spelled michelleglowerrn@gmail.com.
Oh, you must have been been an early adopter to the Gmail. That's pretty good. You don't have any numbers or any symbols.
Yes. Well, I think nobody has that name, Glower.
You're very fortunate. My name is Will Smith, so you can imagine that I'm never the first person to get anything with Will Smith on it.
And what's that phone number that people can call you at, Michelle?
Sure. It's area code 312-406-1239.
Great.
And I do text.
All right. Well, Michelle, we'll have that information on the screen, and we'll have it up on the episode so people can get in contact with you. But we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge. I think our audience is going to really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Great. All right. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes. Trachs.
My heart goes out to anybody that has any type of ostomy. The root is stoma, and it's the small hole that goes into the body. If you have a colostomy bag, the stoma is one that goes into your intestines, so that you can defecate into a bag instead of the typical route because something's happened. With a tracheostomy, the stoma's up here in the trach, and it's an issue because it's something that has to constantly be cleaned. It is an enormous burden. I also happen to think that it's something that we might look back on 100 years from now in the same way that we look back at Civil War medicine, Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an important issue, and she brings up some very good points.
That's right. If you enjoyed this episode, you can listen to other episodes at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or on our YouTube channel. Or you can catch fresh episodes hot off the presses every Monday morning, wherever you get your podcasts from. Mm-hmm. And with that, we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.